Welcome to Season 5 of the Fashion Law Network podcast. I'm your host, Kasia Zabrowska-Traubin, patent attorney and fashion enthusiast based in Los Angeles, California. Join me as I break down legal cases, discuss recent fashion news, and demystify patent law. Hello, and welcome to Episode 4 of Season 5 of the Fashion Law Network podcast. As the year comes to a close, I just want to thank all my local and international listeners throughout this past year. Fashion Law Network is now listened to in over 80 countries worldwide, and it's consistently in the top 10 business news charts in various countries, most recently Switzerland and France. So thank you so much to all my listeners in the US and around the world. Now we're going out with a bang for 2022. As I have a great episode for you guys to end the year off with a very, very special guest, the most recent head of the United States Patent and Trademark Office, Mr. Andre Iancu. Now, just by way of brief background, the director or head of the United States Patent and Trademark Office is the principal intellectual property advisor to the president and the administration through the Secretary of Commerce, and is focused on incentivizing and protecting U.S. innovation and creativity. So, as head of the USPTO, Mr. Iancu oversaw one of the largest intellectual property offices in the world. It's an agency with approximately 13,000 employees. Annual budget is more than $3.5 billion. And he served as the administration's principal advisor on domestic and international intellectual property issues. A few notable initiatives during Mr. Iancu's time as director was the creation of the National Council for Expanding American Innovation, a group of industry and government leaders tasked with helping the USPTO develop a comprehensive national strategy to broaden participation in the innovation ecosystem. And more recently, Mr. Iancu was one of the IP leaders to launch a new organization called Council for Innovation Promotion, or C4IP for short, basically to educate on the importance of innovation to the U.S. economy. So during my discussion coming up with Mr. Iancu, we first get a background and some really interesting details about the USPTO, his launch of the Council for Innovation Promotion, the value of patents. Then we discuss the recent controversial anti-patent comments made by Mr. Elon Musk. And of course, since this is a fashion-centric podcast, we can't omit analyzing the landmark Supreme Court bearing my special guest name, Iancu versus Bernetti, which was a case decided during Mr. Iancu's time as director at the USPTO. In that case, a fashion designer was seeking to trademark his fashion brand, which consisted of the four letters F-U-C-T. And during our discussion, Mr. Iancu gives us some special insights and really interesting behind-the-scene information on this case. That case is especially relevant to my podcast series because the decision in that case was what led designer Tom Ford to be able to trademark his, quote, scandalous best-selling perfume names after waiting for years. And Tom Ford, as all my fashionistas probably know, has been all over the news lately because it was just announced that his company was sold to Estee Lauder for a record $2.8 billion. The deal establishes that Estee Lauder will be the sole owner of the Ford brand and all its intellectual property. So, of course, that includes all of these scandalous trademarks. So, here we go with my discussion with Mr. Andre Iancu. Enjoy! Hello, Mr. Iancu. How are you today?
Hi, Kasia. I'm doing well.
Good.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining me. So I thought before we get into the intellectual property portion of this discussion, perhaps you can provide a brief background of your career and your time at the USPTO.
Sure. So I began what seems like a lifetime ago as an engineer. I went to UCLA and I have degrees in aerospace engineering and mechanical engineering. I worked at Hughes Aircraft building satellite antennas for a few years. Then I went back to UCLA to get a law degree. And After graduation, I've been in private practice as a patent lawyer, IP lawyer, mostly on the litigation side, but handling all sorts of IP related issues and client advice. So I've done that for the better part of the last, let's say, 2 decades. And then in 2018, I went to run. I was nominated and confirmed by the Senate to be the Undersecretary of Commerce for IP and Director of the USPTO. And I did that between 2018 and 2021. And then I came back to private practice. I'm back at my law firm, doing IP related client advice again.
Great, interesting. Now, was there anything that surprised you when you were working in your role at the PTO?
The US PTO, which by the way stands for the US Patent and Trademark Office, is a remarkable agency. It's got 13,000 people, a budget of about $3.5 to $4 billion nowadays. And it's all funded without taxpayer money. The entire revenue is from user fees. And that has dramatic implications on how the agency is run. It is very much like, in many respects, like a private $4 billion entity. And you have to make budget. You can't blow the budget because there is no taxpayer bailout or anything like that. So, one of the most remarkable things about the USPTO is whenever anyone interacts with it, you realize that it doesn't quite feel like government. It's fast moving. It's very responsive. It cares about the folks who interact with it. And it's a very professionally run organization. The whole time, from the beginning to the end, and even now, I am amazed by the quality of the public servants who work there and dedicate their careers to this profession.
Right. So now let's discuss the other important project that you're currently involved with, which has been on my radar, the Council for Innovation Promotion, which I believe was just launched in September of this year. Is that correct?
Yes, we just
Yes.
launched it a couple of months ago.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Maybe like the motivation behind that?
Sure. So we all know that innovation and creation in general of new things, whether it's new literature, new poetry, new visual arts like movies or songs, or technical invention. All of creativity depends entirely on intellectual property rights that incentivize that creativity and protect it so that once it is created, the creator can benefit from the fruits of his or her labor. The problem that has developed in the United States and in many places around the world over the past, let's say 2 decades or so, is that while most of our decision makers, the legislators, people in the administration, they will almost universally say that we want more innovation in the United States, we want more creative work in the United States. While they say that, at the same time, they work to weaken intellectual property rights and they don't see the connection between a need for a robust IP ecosystem and a robust innovation and creativity and creative economy. So we established this council to bridge that gap, to make it clear to the public and to decision makers in Washington that the two are inextricably linked, that you must have a robust intellectual property system, if you want to have increased innovation and increased creativity in the United States.
Right, exactly. Our views on patents are definitely aligned there. Now, let me ask your question or your opinion, actually, on a recent statement made by Elon Musk, which I can guess, when he was quoted as saying that patents are, quote, for the weak. What are your rebuttal to that?
Well, okay, so that statement is obviously purposely provocative.
Yes.
it depends a lot on what he means by the weak, but I'll bet you that you'll be surprised that when I say that in one sense, I agree with him. I don't think it's the sense that he has in mind, but I generally agree with the point that patents most benefit the startups, the new guys, disruptors, folks who are working and tinkering in their garages or in their laboratories and come up with brand new things to disrupt the way the big established companies with monopolistic tendencies that are set in their ways. It's the little guy who benefits most from patents, and frankly, on the creative side, from copyright protection. So, you know, the large established companies can win in the marketplace based on different things. They can win based on their size. They're bigger. They have a much bigger marketing power. They can discount more. They can do all sorts of things to quash the little guy. For the little guy to penetrate with a brand new technology, the only thing they have is the power of their idea and the patent that protects that idea. So for the little guy, for the disruptor, the patent is most important. For the big established giant corporations, while they do have patents, they are less important. So when he says patents are for the weak, to some extent I say, you know what? There is, you know, a point of truth in that. They are for the new entrant who doesn't have the backing of the giant corporation behind him or her. Now, I don't think that's what he meant. I think Musk was trying to be provocative and say that, you know, let's compete on other bases. Right. Let's compete on the power of our technology. You know, we should all come up with new things and may the best technology win, and irrespective of patent protection and all of that. I think that's what he meant. But the reality is that in the real world, when disruptors begin very often as startups and they have to take on the giants, you know, it's not a fair fight unless the disruptor has the protection of the patent. I think it's a very dangerous concept to try to denigrate patents and other forms of intellectual property, because if we don't have them, if we don't have that protection, we will not have the same level of creativity in this country, and you know, in the long run, we will lose our competitive edge.
Right, exactly. Now, another question I had was, currently we're in somewhat of an economic downturn. What are your thoughts on the average value of patent sales? Do you think they're going to track with the economy, or are they typically immune to market fluctuations?
You know, patents are sometimes viewed as being counter-cyclical. You know, intellectual assets, sometimes the value of those assets, are counter-cyclical, and in other words, their value is higher when the rest of the market is down, and potentially vice versa. And they're not, And I don't know how accurate that is in the long run, but what's clear is that they are uncorrelated. Usually the value of intellectual property is based on lots and lots of different factors and market conditions, and not so much on, the current economic trends and, whether you are in a recession or not, or, whether there is inflation or not, and things like that.
Right, exactly. Now, to end our discussion soon, since this is a fashion-centric podcast, we can't leave out without discussing fashion in some context. So, I'd like to quickly go over a landmark Supreme Court decision about trademarks, which was during your time at the PTO, and it bears your name, Iancu versus Brunetti. And it had quite a few ripples within the fashion community afterwards. Namely, a case that I was really closely monitoring at the time by famous fashion designer Tom Ford, who was seeking to trademark a few of his scandalous perfume names using the F word, the most famous one being Effing Fabulous. It's one of his best-selling perfumes. So, just by way of very brief background for my listeners who may not be familiar with this case, in Iancu versus Brunetti, the Patent and Trademark Office, under its director, which was, of course, my guest, filed a writ to the Supreme Court, which agreed to hear the case with oral arguments heard in April of 2019. And that case centered on a man named Eric Brunetti, who started a clothing line titled FUCT, which stood for Friends You Can't Trust. Of course, the FUCT is very phonetically close to another F word. So Brunetti was unsuccessful in obtaining a trademark registration due to the scandalous nature of the word under Section 2A of the Lanham Act. And Brunetti then took the case all the way to the Supreme Court, where it was ultimately decided that the provisions of the Lanham Act prohibiting registration of trademarks of, quote, immoral or scandalous matter are unconstitutional by permitting the United States Patent and Trademark Office to engage in viewpoint discrimination, which violates the free speech clause of the First Amendment. So, Mr. Iancu, can you give me your kind of side of this case? How were you involved with it at all, or how does that work from your side?
Yeah, well, look, I was the director of the Patent and Trademark Office at the time, and the way it works is, people come up with a brand name, and they try to register that brand with the trademark office to get the trademark registration, and there's a process, there's an examination, and if it passes the various statutory requirements, it gets allowed, and you get, the circle R that you see on labels and whatnot. And if it doesn't, it gets rejected, and then the applicant can appeal. In this case, we refused to register it. We refused to register FUCT as pursuant to a statute that says the United States should not register scandalous marks. And they appealed, and the Court of Appeals said that the statute is unconstitutional. The statute being part of the Lanham Act, by the way, Kasia, that dates 75 years ago. But they now found it to be unconstitutional as as a violation of freedom of speech and the First Amendment. That got appealed further to the Supreme Court. And there was a hearing. I proudly went to the hearing. I sat in the audience, and I listened to the argument. And in the end, the Supreme Court affirmed the Court of Appeals and found the statute to be unconstitutional. So we had to ultimately register FUCT on the principal register. The hearing
Right.
was quite something
Was it really?
because, you have multiple lawyers speaking, and you have the justices asking questions. It goes on for like an hour. During the whole time, the word FUCT was never said.
Really?
And It was the funniest thing. And the best, the closest that they got to saying it was the government's lawyer, the Deputy Solicitor General Malcolm Stewart, who described this four-letter word, F-U-C-T, described it as follows. He said it is, quote, the equivalent of the past participle form of the paradigmatic profane word in our culture.
That's so
This is
funny.
the closest they got in a whole hour of argument to
Wow.
actually saying the word.
That's amazing. Thank you for that insight. That's going to be very interesting for my listeners. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for joining me and for teaching everyone about the importance of the patent system and the innovation and the funding that's also necessary in that realm. And perhaps at the end we could provide a link to your council. So if people are interested, they could click on that and get more information. Is there any way for people to get involved with the organization?
Yeah, folks can go visit our website at c4ip.org, and there's all sorts of information there and how you can get involved and whatnot.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Yanku, for joining me.
My pleasure.
And that concludes this episode. As always, thank you so, so much for tuning in. Please come back soon for the new episode. I hope you have a wonderful day. Bye.